Hi, there we are. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, my man. Good. Is this too dark? This is my first time doing a live on Instagram, so pretty cool.
You know, I think you look fine. Where are you at? You outside?
I am, yeah. I figured I would get out in the backyard and nice. Just kind of enjoy out here for a little bit. So the sun is away, and yeah, I love it. It's perfect. So how are you, sir?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I think you may find this slightly funny. So I wasn't worried about us having any, like, a need for topics, right?
Right.
So I had a little list. I was like, oh, we can talk about hand cycling. I have some questions, right? We've kind of emailed back and forth about writing. But then, so Avery did, the training call with you guys today, right?
Right.
And we always send out, just sort of a how it went. Here's what we talked about, right? And apparently you guys discussed time to peak on the eccentric portion of a lift. Yeah. And the geek in me also wanted to talk about that. So not stressed out in terms of us being able to find topics.
It. And yeah, that was Coach Wellman brought that up today, and it was a pretty interesting topic. So I don't know how much I'm going to be able to shed light on that, though, because that one caught me off guard, because I haven't even thought about that either. I mean, it's an interesting in a way of looking at those numbers that I haven't thought of before.
Well, can we just openly chat about that one for a second?
Sure.
Terms of my fascination, maybe we should just get Aaron on one of these and just go. But
yeah.
So, because I was immediately like, well, it's time to peak, but is that almost an apples to apples comparison? Because I'm effectively, the faster I want to go down in the eccentric, say on a squat, I kind of made this joke in our company chat today. I'm just kind of getting out of the way of the bar and then I've got to catch it.
Right.
Might be a really oversimplified way of thinking about it. So what does peak mean in a scenario like that? And then I just wanted to go full geek mode on the whole thing. But so yeah, maybe we can table that for another day. But
yeah,
we can see it. So, but what it means to measure it,
right,
is sort of fascinating. So
yeah, it was a pretty interesting. It totally caught me off guard because Aaron brought it up, and then they start talking about it, and even then, how that metric is relayed and what it looks like. And then what are you actually looking, you could quantify that, but what are you looking for it in the actual training aspect to it? So it's pretty, yeah, I think it's going to be a topic that we're going to be discussing here for a lot coming up. So should be pretty fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me apologize. My dog's going crazy. I don't know if you can hear.
I can, but mine will be doing the same here any minute. So
someone must have the audacity to be walking by our house. So not cool. You did that upper hand, I believe, podcast maybe a couple of months mm-hmm. ago. And
yes.
So I didn't repeat things you've maybe talked about too many times. I was sort of looking through some of those discussion points. And while you and I had talked about cycling a little bit, I did not know that you had done some adventure races.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's maybe an outside chance we've raced against each other before, which could be
this
weird.
Is good.
So
yeah.
When did you start adventure racing back in the day?
So back in the day, it would have been in 2000 and would have been in 2001 is when I start doing, they had this series called the Balance Bar. I think it was Balance. No, it first started off as the High Tech Adventure Racing Series, and then it was later bought out by Balance Bar. And that's how I kind of got into it, with these short little 6 hour little deals. And then I don't know, it just kind of kept morphing from there. So, but that's where it originated.
Did you ever do an event in the Hoosier National Forest in 2003, 2004-ish?
No. So I didn't get out to, I didn't get out to Indiana until 2005, and so everything up until that point was all East Coast wise. I spent a lot of time up and down East Coast. We came as far as Ohio, but never made it into Indiana there until 2005.
So what made you decide to dip your toe into the water of adventure racing?
I played football my entire life, did that whole deal, that competitive nature. Then I start, when that was all said and done, I just wanted to get into some kind of competition. So I start riding my bike, and riding turned to racing, and then racing just turned into these challenges. And then all of a sudden, I got introduced to it by a close friend that said, there's these adventure races that you could get in there, teams of, between two and four, all these different apparatuses you got to contend with. And I just saw it as this huge competition and a fun way of dealing with, the outdoors and dealing with it. And so that's how it started. And then it took off really fast because, let me tell you, adventure racing in the beginning, when you think about going 3 or 4 hours, I'm a football guy, I'm thinking about going 3 or 4 hours here. And that seemed absurd. But once you do 3 or 4 hours, you realize that, 3 or 4 hours wasn't that bad. And then 3 to 4 turns to 6 to 10 to 12. And then you find yourself in the woods for like 72 hours rolling. So, but it all originated with that little bit. And again, I have that cycling background. That's what I love. I love to be on a bike. I don't care what kind of bike it is. I just love being on the bike. But I also love to be able to do that as a social type thing too. So having the aspect of biking and doing it as a team and being able to be put in these situations that, quite frankly, you just wanted to quit and you just kept kind of pushing through it.
So what would have been one of the more challenging adventure races you ever did?
Hands down, the hardest one we ever did was this 24 hours. It was called the Wild Wonderful 24-Hour Adventure Race. It was in West Virginia, the New River Gorge. Starts off, not the New River, actually starts off with the Gully. No, it was the New River. Yeah. Start off at the base of the New River, and they put you in, and it's Class 5 Rapids, and you're rolling. Flying down this river. I've done that a couple times. I've kayaked it. I've done a bunch of different things. Typical day on the water is like 5 hours, 6 hours. That adventure race started off with a sprint through a normal 5 hour course. We were doing it at under like 50 minutes. So it was just as hard as you can, cranking with that, ripping down. And then that was the start of just a long, long, long time of some of the craziest terrain. Cause you're at the base of the New River Gorge. You gotta, you're going from the base all the way to the top. You're up and down, and it's completely by yourself. And it was pretty awesome. But that was by far the hardest one. That was the one that we did the first time. And we went all through the night. We woke up, or we didn't wake up, but we came through daybreak. And then by 8 o'clock, one of the teammates said, "Man, I think I'm done." And then as soon as that one person said it, everybody's like, "Yeah, we're done."
Pandora's box was opened.
Oh, and you want to know the kicker of this? This is the worst part. So we had the little, the little spot things that you have, they basically send you an automatic GPS deal. Well, hitting that was one thing, but my wife was the volunteer at the race. And so who ends up coming to rescue us but my wife? And we still have the video of four of us just laying on the side of the road, and she comes up on us and takes this big video, and it was so horrible.
Not the memory you wanted recorded.
No. And then really that was like right in the beginning of really doing the long adventure races, doing the high tech ones and stuff. They were pretty hard, but you never really felt like quitting on them. But once you were in the woods and you're even going 12 hours, stories about just you're 6 hours into this race and you look down on your arm and there's a tick on your arm, and you're like, "Whoa, pull that off." And then you realize you're covered in ticks. I mean, from your armpits to your, it's pretty tough, but you can't escape it because you're in the middle of the woods. It's not like that's one of the best parts about adventure racing, because of the fact, that I love being so you're in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you're in the middle of nowhere, and you could say you quit. You could say I'm done. But unless you have one of those devices on or a wife that's going to be willing to come and get you, you pretty much have to fend for yourself to get out of it.
Yeah, sometimes it can be just as much work getting out off the course than just continuing.
Oh, so no why doubt, bother? No doubt. Exactly. I'm moving to the side here. Make my visual a little bit better.
Whoop. Well, it's not a competition, but okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever do, since we're talking East Coast stuff, did you ever do Don Mann's Adventure Race Series?
I have not.
Out in Virginia? So
Don Mann, no.
The first race I ever did, he's an ex-Navy SEAL. And it was, I want to say it was just a 24-hour race. But I did it with a friend of mine and I from Indianapolis. And we didn't know what we didn't know, so to speak. And so we decided, like, you know, kind of just real quickly, how are we going to pace ourselves and that kind of thing. And so our idea was we'll run everything except the uphills. We'll jog everything. We'll walk the uphills. We'll probably do pretty decently on the bike.
Which is a great strategy, because I remember thinking the same thing. That's a really solid strategy.
And like, it was a full nav course. You had to navigate the whole thing. And so, and he was a pretty good navigator. And so we just thought, okay, we'll push ourselves and we'll kind of compete against ourselves. But then each step of the way, each checkpoint, we kept finding out, hey, we're not doing too badly. Hey, this is going all right. And you just push a little harder. And then we got to the point where you had to come out of a river and do this rock climb. And it wasn't a full harnessed climb. It was more like a scramble. But you did have to carabine into some ropes. And I was tired enough that I got to the top of a rope section where I needed to switch everything. And I realized I had dropped all my ropes.
Oh.
And so I had to down climb to just get anything back. And I was pretty freaked out. And I finally got to the top, and like, people were yelling from the bottom to like figure out where I was at. And that was right at that was my low moment where I was like,
right,
I'm not sure this is worth doing. But then I was so annoyed with myself for being so dumb that my kind of my stubbornness kicked in. We get going again, and I'm sort of just like, I'm sure, rambling and grousing about how dumb I was to my teammate. And we see this team ahead of us. And as you can imagine, then it's like, oh, well, now I'm not going to worry about finishing the course. We just need to get to those four people right there.
Yep. Yep.
And we got to them at the top of this mountain, and I'm freezing cold. It's just turned night. We're switching to bikes, and I'm kind of excited because I feel like, well, I'll be good to go here. Yeah. But they had this car running, and I laid down on the hood where it was warm.
Oh.
And one of the guys from the other team comes over, and he's like, hey, brother, you ready to go? We're all going together, right? And I was like, well, sure. That's fine. And then he's like, so, what are you in? And I was like, what do you mean, what am I in? And he's like, well, we're Rangers, so what are you guys? And I was not functioning, right? And I was like,
yeah,
we're just two morons, man. And so we had this great conversation basically for the final portion of the race that was really kind of a comparison of how we all sort of got to being on top of that mountain.
Right.
And that was probably the thing that sort of locked in me wanting to continuing to do those, where I started the day, kind of wanted to push myself, right?
Yep.
And wanted to race a little bit. But the camaraderie that existed once you kind of got going and were neck deep into it was the thing that sort of locked me in. So
for people that haven't done
it, it's an interesting experience.
Yeah, and it's such a team deal, because even when you're in the woods and you're together and you come across another team, it's all about that kind of it's all about, you know, the teamwork and everybody else just being around, and that's motivating. I mean, that's something that kind of keeps that draw of coming back and wanting to, you know, do this. Like, there's just there's so many points I can remember throughout those races that I'm like, let me finish. I'll never do this again. I'll never do it again. And then you have a moment like that. You have a moment like, all right, this is the reason we're coming back. This is how we're going to do it. It's a great sport. It's something that we've talked about a couple times because my two of the teammates are still out here. And later on, my wife, actually right before I got in the accident, we were doing them for probably about the last 2 years before this accident. And we were racing together and spending some time. And let me tell you, if you want to ever see if you're really meant to be, hang out in the woods for 24 and 48 hours with your significant other and go through that stuff. And whew, it's a tough one. So, but it, again, we left there and it's just an incredible sport that really, I don't know, it encompasses so much that goes into it from the physical, but the mental side of just being able to, you know, keep moving forward is such a cool thing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So were you then like sort of applying your, call it your work life, for lack of a better term, in terms of how to train to adventure racing? Like how was that? Did that cross over at all for you? Or like it's curious to me, there's a lot of disciplines to be pretty good at if you really mm-hmm. want to be a good adventure racer. And it's not as if strength and conditioning coaches typically have tons of free time. Right. So how did you handle all of that?
Yeah. So, you know, I spend a ton of time just wanting to be outdoors. Like strength coaches are really busy. When I first moved out to Indiana, I think I had 8 different teams. We get in at 5:30 in the morning and go until 6 or 7 at night, just nonstop. But then you also have the option of what do you do in the middle of that? You know, you're not working 12 and 13 hours all the time in there. And even weekends, you know, when you got freedom or when you got some free time, you spend your time and you do what you want with it. And for me, that was it. It was spend the time working, doing all the stuff that I can as a strength coach. But the second I had to get on my bike, to train, to learn how to rappel, I mean, I remember taking a land nav orienteering course that IU offered, and I was doing it between 12 and 2 each day just to try and figure it out because I was getting so – that compass was killing me trying to figure out how to be a good land navigator. But I just invested those seconds. We're filled with so much time throughout the day, but it's really maximizing – those minutes and seconds for that because again, we have a lot of things that are controlled, work, training our athletes. They're the factors that we got to make sure that we're always doing. But all the stuff on the other side, just it comes down to really good planning and stuff. But, I remember even just working on how to deal with, I'm definitely going to have to move here in a second, but, we were working on first time we were going 24 hours. And having the lights and being able to ride and doing all this stuff. And I remember waking up at like 4:30 in the morning with our team and just getting out there and trying to get our, you know, how you're going to orienteer at night from the headlamps you're going to have on to the lights that are going to be on your bike. Like, how is it going to work? And it was just a priority. I mean, I loved adventure racing. I love being in the woods. I love the fact that I knew if it was hard enough, I would definitely want to quit this. And it was something that drove me more than anything, you know, that I've ever done. It was just such a cool deal.
So did you, like you, I'm kind of backing up a little bit. You know, you mentioned you had the one time where you guys decided to call it, right? And your wife picked you up. Mm-hmm. Was that the only one though?
Well,
never happened again.
No, regretfully, no, it happened. I'll tell you the other one, we're in Kentucky and we're on, I think they call it the land between the lakes. And, We get in the water and this spring deal, it actually would have been going on maybe like early May, maybe late April. And we were going the whole day. And it's like the 70-degree day. Knights come up on the canoeing section. We're a group of 4 guys, 2 in each canoe. We get into the water and we start paddling. We put into the main section of the lake, which isn't a lake. There's a current. There's a strong current that really – so we had to go upwards with it. Well, as soon as we start paying, white caps are coming over the top of the bow, and it's miserable. And we're going. You could see on the shoreline, you know, you could spot little fires that like campers have and stuff. And it was like 30 minutes to go hardly anywhere. And that was a 14-mile paddle from A to B. And I remember stopping probably about 4 miles before before that was before we had actually get out of the water. And we pulled along shore, came in, and there was a bunch of people camping. And took a second. We were freezing. We were exhausted. And they offered us the dreaded baked potato. They had a baked potatoes in the fire. And once you open up and have potato. One piece of hot, I still, to this day, it's the greatest baked potato I've ever had. I learned much better. The idea at Orienteering isn't a one-man show. It's all about the team. It's all about who's pacing, how to keep on target. Using adventure racing as more of a nothing individual, but using it as the team and move quicker, which friends of ours that were Army Rangers as well, they're the ones that kind of taught us all that, because we just kind of thought one Orienteer guy, three of us would go along for the stroll, and realize you're not going to win very much if you do that.
So this is one of those things. Avery may have chatted with you a little bit about this earlier today, but kind of more work related. How are you guys ramping back up to, like, in terms of rooms opening back up and getting athletes back in based on, you know, coming out of this pandemic? How's that going for you guys?
Our plan is to pulling here on a very fall, guys. You know, from that point, it's literally making sure, hopefully everybody, you know, making sure that we're doing everything possible to keep our athletes safe, keep everybody on staff safe. And then after 2 weeks, we're going to try and bring more. Every 2 weeks, bring more and more and more, more coaches, more athletes. And then the whole goal is to eventually, you know, come by August, we're, you know, trying to get these kind of back on campus and back training and get them all set for this upcoming year.
So it sounds like you're trying to, if this is oversimplifying, I'm sure, but stage your way back to normal, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's it. It's kind of just feeling, you know, kind of going through staging, phasing, all that stuff, trying to go, and you hope, and you take every precaution that we can. You take into account everything that you can to keep our athletes safe, and, you know, God forbid something does happen, then we know we got to dial it back. We know we got to do some different changes to the protocol. As of right now, there's, you know, there's a lot of really smart people saying that if we do this, we should be all right. We should be, you know, keep people safe and be able to get our guys back.
Well, I like to reference the fact that I'll just lean on smart people as well. So,
yep.
Yeah, as long as there's enough consensus, right, around the idea of coming back. And so are you going to be directly dealing with men's soccer again as well?
I will. Yeah. So men's soccer will, you know, obviously a fall sport. I'll be working with them, you know, hands on. This is going to be, you know, it's a lot different this year for the fact that most of our guys are out playing in different leagues, playing in different, different scenarios where they're constantly going. Even if they won strength and condition, they're out there still practicing and being part of activity. And right now, yeah, it is. It's obviously we're all in the same boat. And so now it's all a matter of coming back and keeping these guys safe, making sure that we're keeping these guys taking into account that they have done nothing. And we have got to start from ground zero and really kind of break them back in there slow and building up and you know, working for the goal of getting them back to top notch shape as quick as we can. But under the guidance of again, really smart people in the medical community, to make sure that we're all good to go.
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario with, I was talking about this with Chris Bach, who's at the NAPL here in town. Like, athletes are becoming detrained in a way that they haven't really before. Because if you were a soccer kid, you were always going to be playing in some way, shape, or form, which is not necessarily true of football, right? Tends to be true of basketball, et cetera. So in some ways, you've got these unique challenges per sport. Did I just totally lose you? Oh, yep, I did. Chris, today, here we go. Chris, to answer your question, this is, I found a cocktail recipe called an In-N-Out, which is limoncello, vodka, and a little bit of soda.
Love it.
Hey, Tom. Welcome back. Man.
Sorry about that. Not sure what happened on there, but we're back.
Who knows? Yeah, so Chris Caviglia, who we work with, Queensland Academy of Sport down in Australia, he always checks in about what cocktail or drink I'm having, even though it's his morning and he's clearly having coffee. Now, I saw you had a beer. So
I do.
What were you enjoying?
So I was enjoying Spotted Cow out of Wisconsin, one of the best beers you could ever, we had an employee that was from Wisconsin, and they just talked about Spotted Cow, and brought it down one day. And it's like a lager that is, it's perfect. Especially on a hot day like this. It's pretty awesome.
Nice. Yeah. I am going to use that as a semi-awkward segue. So you mentioned employees, right? Or former employees. One of the things, like, we're 8 years in with Elite Form, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the challenges, if I feel like putting myself in sort of, if you're in a head role or an administrator, is the coaching carousel.
Right.
And you guys have been feeling that challenge, right? In terms of, you've had great people, and the challenge, and I feel this with Elite Form, right? When you have great people on staff, they tend to be in demand.
Yep.
And so you want to mentor and provide people tons of opportunity, at least in my opinion, right? To then grow and go where they want to go. Yet you always want to then keep your staff, obviously, as solid as possible. So how do you deal with, in your world, kind of figuring out, keeping things balanced, and just making sure that kind of IU Sports, for lack of a better way to put it, is performing as well as it can?
Yeah, that is the crazy dilemma of athletics. You know, every year our athletic director brings us all together, and we have that beginning of the year meeting, you know. And if you weren't at the meeting the year before, you have to go up and introduce yourself. And every single time, there's almost a third of the people have to get up there and introduce themselves because of the constant turnover. I mean, it's like you said, it's kind of that bittersweet thing. You know, if your people are moving on, they're moving on to good roles. You love that for them, and you want them to do that. But on the same thing, that continuity and being able to have that consistency within a staff is the other thing that we battle all the time. So, you know, for us, we've been really, really fortunate, especially on the Olympic side, that we've been able to keep a staff together for as long as we have. You know, we've had a little bit of turnover, but for the most part, we haven't had nearly as much until just recent, where we're down literally like almost half of the staff. But then on the football side, you know, again, you can't say enough good things about Dave Ballou and Doc Matt Rea. I mean, as far as them pushing what this field is about, utilizing Elite Form, showing us some of the ins and outs of not only using velocity-based training, but really getting the highest level out of it. You know, not just using it as just a recruiting deal, not just using it as measuring bar speed, but looking at these intricate details of how to really make, you know, a football player better to a soccer player, exactly sport-specifically better. And that is incredibly it's awesome. It's the easiest way to say it. But then on the other thing, you know you're going to lose those guys because you know they're not going to stick around for as long as you'd hope. So, you know, again, you maximize when the people are around you, and you learn from them, and you continue to keep those relationships going, and then you wish them the best and help them out as much as you possibly can. And that's the story of a lot of great organizations is, you know, you want them to stick around. You want to be able to do as much as you can for them. But on the other end, if they do move on, you keep that network going and you still continue to keep learning from them. And for us, that's the same thing. You know, Dr. Ray and Coach Ballou, we're going to still learn from them. We're going to still be able to be impacted by some of the stuff that they've done. And now with Coach Wellman, I mean, again, even today, that call, I mean, I've talked to him a dozen different times, but like he totally blew my mind with some of the stuff he was asking on there. So again, we're living in the moment right now and just continuing to keep getting better, you know, and keep thriving to make the big picture better.
It makes sense. And it's real. I always feel like you can look at it as a positive or you can look at it as a negative, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's how do you want to deal with it? Like that's the choice you like we have in terms of making sure any staff is as good as it could possibly be.
Right.
At any given moment, right?
Yeah, and it's something that we're,
Oh, no, you're fine. I was just going to say, because if you're not improving, you're degrading.
Exactly right. And that's what it is we never, you know, in our training to everything, we're never status quo. We're not just, you know, maintaining. We're always getting better or you're getting worse. And that's the same with that. Our staff is we want great people to be around. We want to be able to learn from them. And when they're in our presence, when they're around us, you know, we're going to learn from them to the highest level and then continue to keep moving forward. And that's the nature of it. That's the nature of great athletics. Great organizations are run that way.
Absolutely. If you don't mind, I'm going to back up to what we were talking about when we got cut off. And basically what I was trying to ask was, when you think about men's soccer, right? When those athletes aren't with you, as you were mentioning, they're playing somewhere, right? And some sports are very analogous to that, like basketball, right? Someone's playing somewhere, right? If it's high school, right, and you're not in season, you're playing AAU, et cetera. Whereas like football, that's not really the case, right? It's not like people are just, you know, suiting up, right, and going at it. So, like, how do you feel like you're going to be dealing differently with men's soccer than, say, someone who's directly over football is going to be treating those athletes? Is it playing, like, kind of from a training session standpoint, you're way more into shape? Or how are you thinking about that?
Yeah, kind of, you know, the world of soccer, a lot of the stuff we're doing now, I feel really good about, because getting our guys fit, if we could build a great aerobic base, or at least a high, a maximal aerobic base in these times, we're going to be able to come back and really get into some really good training and then make it really specific to it. The difference with soccer compared to football is my soccer guys, if you're, you know, 160 pounds or 180 pounds, you may get pushed off the ball a little. You may have, you know, some deficiencies, but chances are skills and all these other things will formulate around maybe some of those deficiencies that your body had before. You know, the world of football, it's a challenging time right now because of the fact a lot of our guys literally are just doing body weight stuff. So to create that hypertrophy, to be able to keep weight on and be able to do it. I mean, the world of football is an impact sport. I mean, it is, these guys, you cannot fake that. If you come back and you're underweight and you're getting pushed around, that's a tough deal, you know. So there's big differences that go into that. But our approach is this: we're gonna really build that aerobic base right now. And then when we do get into the season, when we do get into practice and really start going, we're definitely gonna play ourselves into shape, and we'll do some conditioning on the back end of it. But the reality is that touch and that everything that needs to be so fluent with soccer, you know. We got to be on the field. We got to be on the field, and we got to put a ball at their feet, and we'll be able to get both sides of it.
Makes sense. And I should provide this disclaimer. My son plays, so I always have like a kind of a level of personal interest as well, just in terms of how leaning on smart people again, right? Yeah. So not to write you a homework card, but all right. So how is everyone thinking in the soccer community thinking about building back up? So.
Yeah, and that's it. Our time being right now is so important to get these guys out with aerobic, you know, just get them running, getting that a good aerobic base, and then get touches at their feet, you know, do ball work, have all that stuff, because those are the little things that when they do come back and they get organized again, yeah, they'll be able to transition a lot easier.
So let me make sure I have my details right. So you played football growing up. Did you play soccer at all? Or did you end up learning about soccer as you were becoming a performance coach for the sport? How's that work?
So American football, that's what I grew up doing. That's where that's where I was born into. Northeast Pennsylvania. We played football. So I never played soccer until later on in college. I like to refer to myself as the Division I intramural soccer player, but that's about it. So when I got to Indiana, I had a lot of learning ahead of me. I had a lot of maybe kind of ideas of what the training was going to look like, but I didn't know exactly. And I spent, we had Coach Freitag here at that point, and Coach Yeagley was an assistant. And I just remember just sitting there listening to them talk soccer and find out what are the real important parts of this. What does a great soccer player have? You know, the best part about what I have is the fact that Indiana soccer is the upper echelon of great soccer. So all I had to do is look at what they're coaching, what they're doing, the athletes that we have, and how they play and what they do. And so what I did was I just sat there and I was a student, and it was awesome because I hate to say it, I didn't know much about the game. I didn't know positions. I didn't know what was needed. And I sat there for the first year of literally just trying to digest as much as I can and come up with programming based around that. And now it's turned into literally my wife and I will sit here and watch everything from the MLS to the Premier League to everything. It's just turned into something that we both love, but it's something that neither one of us grew up around.
That sounds super similar. Like there was no, for me, soccer literally was not a sport as an option mm-hmm. in high school.
Right.
There was no club, like there was no intramurals. And I grew up in Indiana, which it was basketball and football, right? Right. At my high school, we were a football high school, but still pretty, as a state, it's basketball. But so then as a parent, we did what I think a lot of people do, and it was have your kids sample everything, mm-hmm. see where they have motivation, right? See where they, you know, have some passion. And you try to foster that. And then pretty early on, I was like, oh, well, my son has picked the sport I know absolutely nothing about.
I love it.
So like you said, it's time to become the student, right?
Yeah.
So I was, you know, probably doing all sorts of boneheaded things. Like there was a group of dads who played in a men's league, right? And I was like, I'll play. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yep.
But this will give me some good context. So, you know, I'm in the back line and I'm like, well, I'm going to treat this like half defensive back, half point guard.
Yep.
And, you know, it didn't really completely work, but it kind of helped. So,
no, it's unbelievable. I mean, I joke with everybody. I tell the guys all the time, I'm like, I don't get it. Concept of soccer, small ball, big goal. And you score like one or two goals a game. I'm like, I don't get. And they always get a chuckle out of that. But it wasn't until, in my head, it wasn't far off when I first started. I couldn't understand how, you know, a 2-0 game is like a blowout. Like, I just couldn't understand it. And then I got out there with the guys, like you just said, got out there and start playing. And just their ability to hold that ball and be able to do, I mean, it was just mind-blowing. And it gave me a big appreciation. But it made me know what, to an extent, of what these guys are doing and how skilled they need to be and what they're from their aerobic capability to their ability to explode, change of direction, and to play this game at the highest level. It gave me a good appreciation for it.
Yeah, there is the one thing about goal scoring. This is a bit of a tangent, but and slightly a soapbox maybe. But the degree of difficulty in certain aspects of sport is something sometimes it's hard to appreciate unless you're in that sport, right? Yep. I remember in high school, we didn't really have a strength conditioning coach for football, but it was a classic case of like one of our defensive coaches sort of doubled as that.
Yeah.
And I was a baseball guy. I was, you know, your kind of typical three sporter, but mainly baseball. And he was like, how can you quantify success at like 33%?
Isn't it true? I mean,
and I was not, I, you know, as I look back, it was probably some deep, like good natured ribbing. I didn't take it that way because I was not mature enough to take it in the right way. Yeah. I took it as a knock, but it is funny to think about, well, yeah, actually we can be okay with the fact that 33% in that context is doing an amazing job, just like managing to score a goal sometimes, particularly if someone's parking the bus, right?
Yep.
Is all you can do. So can we talk about hand cycling for a little bit?
Oh man. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I've kind of the more I have read, because we've not discussed it directly, right? About the fact that you really love cycling, right? Had a mountain bike mishap, and now are continuing to be, I'll just call it an athlete. Like kind of a permanent athlete is a way I describe it. Like certain people just are always doing something. You seem like one of those guys. I'm one of those guys. But I'm super curious about just from a hand cycling perspective, what does it still allow you to do where I could join you on a bike and we could go on a ride? So can we just rock out in the Hoosier National Forest and the gearing works for both of us, or how does that go?
So we're talking almost two different things, because we got hand cycling, which is predominantly all road biking. So we're, you know, cranking away. You're on the road.
I didn't even know that.
Yep. So, and there are hand cycles that are for the woods. But it's just hard. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, we're using two different muscle groups. The legs are powerful and being explosive. When you have the friction of the dirt trails and the undulating terrain, it's darn right hard to get that thing going. Now on a road bike or a hand cycle, we could get out there and haul butt, man. I mean, you could hold those things at 20 miles an hour and rip all around and have a good old time. Now, what I have, and I give it a plug because it's the greatest piece of equipment I've ever used, is the Bowhead Reach. I mean, it's something that anyone, period, would absolutely love. But anyone that does suffer from a spinal cord injury or paralysis or have any kind of deficiencies, it's the mountain bike version of I guess that's the easiest way to say it, but it has an electric motor and the whole thing articulates. So to answer your question, yes, you and I could get out in the Hoosier National Forest, and it is as wide. The bike is only as wide as the handlebars, so we literally should be able to fit on almost every trail. I've been in Hoosier National Forest in Brown County a million times, and it is world class.
I had that sense. So,
and especially there's a new trail there that they've widened up, and they have these great kickers that you can launch right through the air. It's just awesome. There's adaptive equipment has come a long way. Adaptive equipment, and they contributed to a lot of the fact that there's a lot of people living with, spinal cord injuries, unfortunately, especially with a lot of stuff that happens overseas, and a lot of young people that want to be athletic, they want to be competitive, and they want to just keep getting out and thriving. And that's what this is kind of giving me the opportunity, these different pieces of equipment have allowed me to gain my life back in the fact of, you know, not only just riding again, but actually competing, getting out and competing in the world of hand cycling. I haven't been in any competitions with the Bowhead yet, but hopefully that's in the near future.
So, pardon my ignorance, but like from the Bowhead standpoint, what competitions would you end up doing? Like, are they more analogous to like a cross country mountain bike race, or
it's pretty much all downhill. So what they do is they try, because you do have an electric motor on there. So they try to limit the amount that you would be able to gain any kind of ground with the electric, because obviously electric is going to be substantially better than your other body.
It helps out a little.
It helps out a little bit, you know. So this is one that is just straight downhill. So, you know, we were out at Whistler last year, I guess it was. And, Whistler has, just incredible terrain parks. And my wife and I got out there, and she's on the new electric bikes, the Power Assist ones, and we're just ripping all around this mountain.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, total freedom. I mean, just the ability to get out there and be in the woods, be in nature, and being it. It's something that I try to articulate it to people, but when you don't have the ability to get in the dirt and grass and be in the middle of the trees and stuff, it was one of the biggest things that I just missed so much. And I wasn't able to do it for, you know, almost like 7 years. It wasn't until last year I got this mountain bike. Yeah, and then I got the mountain bike.
Oh, it's that recent. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all the other stuff has been just road biking. So I've been out on the road bike and traveling all around the country, spent time at the Olympic Training Center and done a lot. But I still was missing that that dirt. I mean, that's the easiest way to say it. It's just when you get out there with your boys and you're out there mountain biking and spending that time, it's, I don't know, it's tough to put into words how freeing it is and how valuable it is to me.
Well, I think that's the case with probably a lot of experiences like that, right? Where some things you really do have to be immersed, right? Yeah. I mean, Hemingway aside, right, there's not many people that are going to be able to actually put down on a page or even through a quality conversation, be able to express what you can experience with all five senses in any given environment. And adventure racing can take you there to some degree if you're not so tired that you can't appreciate it at the time.
Right.
As can a bike. So that is one thing about, not the soapbox, but like with COVID-19 and the pandemic, people are getting out more in a way, at least here locally, and it seems like from the articles I've read, in a way that they really haven't before. Like, you've got bike companies nationwide that are completely sold out of bikes.
It's unbelievable.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. No, and it is. It's you know, there. COVID is obviously, it's pretty scary. It's pretty awful. But on the other end, I don't know, the people that have been able to spend more quality time together, get out and enjoy this, you know, Mother Nature. And I mean, again, not going on that kind of a soapbox, but I mean, it's just awesome. I mean, you know, so many people miss that opportunity. You know, for me, that was it. I talk about your original question about how do you balance, you know, training for an adventure race and then strength training. You know, I don't want to say I prioritized either one of them, but I did at given points. I mean, yeah, and for me, I knew that an in-season team I had to deal with and make sure that they were, you know, taken care of. But on the other end, when I could get outside, there was no way that I was going to sit in a basketball practice or whatever. I wanted to be out and in that. And again, like you said, the five senses, being able to feel it out there, being able to smell, to be able to, it's just something I just encourage everybody to really take advantage of.
So what would be the longest distance, that you'd be interested in riding, say like a gravel race, et cetera?
Yeah. So I've done a few 100-mile races. This is on the hand cycle on the road, which is really, really, it's pretty awesome. I mean, it's painful because you're just really, grinding, and you're laying in this, you know, you're laying in this bike and you're just in this shell and you just got to keep pushing and pushing with it. You know, for me, I don't know what I know. Right across Indiana's coming up. Well, not coming up, but it'll be up here this year that we were talking about doing that of 200 plus. I think that would be something that could be really, really cool. There's a thought in my mind. I have a friend that ended up going on to be a Navy SEAL, and he's a former intern of ours, but he did this challenge of every 4 hours he ran 4 miles, and he did that for 48 hours. And I'm like, man, I wonder if I could do, you know, 10 miles every 4 hours and do that for 48 hours and just see, you know, how that kind of adds up. So I don't know, just like those little challenges that I think are there to push yourself. Because the world of cycling is funny, because you could say, I want to do 200, but you could get 40 miles into it and be suffering as much, if not more, than what the 200-mile good day would have been. So it's kind of a really rewarding sport for the fact that you just never know what the day is going to bring, and it gives you each challenge each time.
So I'm gonna slide out another option to you. Just You can keep it in the back of your mind. So in Lincoln, we have Gravel Worlds, and it's roughly 150 miles, and you know, I happen to know that a vendor that Indiana works with is located in Lincoln, Nebraska. We'd be happy to host you out, right? It's a event. Friends of mine put it on, fairly well known. Or we could trade. I could come out for the Indiana thing. You could come out for Gravel Worlds here in Lincoln. We could ride together and swap some stories.
Dude,
throw that out there.
Count me in. I mean, we don't even have to think about it. I'm in. I mean, it's the challenge of that is awesome. The gravel aspect, oh, that was another thing too, is just the cycle cross bike gravel roads. It's the best riding you can be on. I mean, it's awesome. So yeah, I'm in. Count me in, whatever.
Okay.
It is
awesome. Well, one of the so not to bore you to tears with how my brain works, but so I generally need a goal, or I get a little grumpy. Like, I'm looking over at my wife right now. She's probably just nodding her head. Like, she'll kick me out and make me go on rides sometimes. And the pandemic has not helped that, right? Sitting on my kitchen island and working, sometimes it's just time for me to get out of the house. But So I was, have you heard of Dirty Kanza?
I have, yes.
Yeah. So last year, I decided I want to get back into competitive racing. And so I decided to try to sign up for DKXL, right, which is the 350-mile version. And I have kind of a resume, but it's got a big gap in it. And that gap is basically trying to ramp up elite form, right?
Right.
And so, but like our whole crew was like, no, like that's something you need to do. So like our staff was behind it, my wife was behind it. And so I did that, and it was kind of freeing in a way to have that goal. And I suspect you understand exactly what that's like. But then, so this year, signed up again, got in again. And then a friend of mine and I signed up to do the Breck Epic as a duo. And something you said earlier really hit home. I did not realize how much I missed the team aspect of sports until I was signed up to do a race with a teammate. Right? And unless you road cycle, right? Cycling's not going to give you that. And so, guy's name's Matt, right? And Matt is, built like bamboo, like he's a classic climber. He's out in Breck. I am not built like a climber, right? And but that was part of the process and part of the fun. So as you can appreciate, I was like, all right, watts per kg, let's figure this out. Like, where do I need to
I
be?
love it.
He's on a hard tail, so I'm like, okay, he's gonna outclimb me anyway. So I have this Trek Super Caliber on order, like kind of pimped out, full suspension. And I thought, wow,
Then and the new full
maybe I could leave the
suspension too.
downhill.
You got the new full suspension, man. That's pretty awesome.
I got pre-approved with all the finances and went for it. But
Wow.
then it got canceled. So I'm sitting out here with this. I need a goal. I need something to do. And once you and I were exchanging some emails back and forth, I was like, I'm gonna see what Tom's got going on. Maybe we can figure out at least something, right? Where I can put a stake down on a calendar. So, I don't know when that Indiana thing is. I know I think they follow me on Instagram. I'll have to check it out. But if we can sync that up, I don't know what kind of a draft, how that would work.
Not
But
much.
we can figure that out.
Yeah,
We can figure it out.
I tell you get two hand cycles together, you could draft all day. It's awesome, but a road bike and a hand cycle, we'll have to figure it out. So
Don't you feel like, though, good conversation is just as good as a draft?
better. I mean, good conversation, and when you could let that mind slip away a little bit and really get into that conversation, yeah, I mean, you're flowing.
Maybe we should save time to peak on the eccentric portion of a lift for a ride, because I think hours would go by like that. Trying to dive into all the nuances of that.
It'd be crazy. It would be crazy.
I don't know if Aaron rides, but
Yeah.
that would be an interesting conversation. Well,
I
hey,
love
we're
it.
almost at an hour, so I will let you go. Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for dealing with just the open conversation kind of form of this. I know you are doing. I did want to mention for anybody who's still listening. You guys are doing those Wednesday webinars,
We
if
are.
that's a fair way to put it. Are you going to continue those for a while, or what's that look like? Because they're super valuable, I think. And for me, like as a vendor, we don't often get to sit in on things like that. Like if you go to a conference, you've got to man a booth and don't get to go to the speakers half the time. So to me, it's been great. But how long are you going to keep doing that?
So the goal is, so what we're doing is we're calling them Indiana Strength All Access. They're all access talks. The format on them is, we're averaging about 4 to 6 speakers every single week, and each one of the speakers presents a 10-minute, a max of 10 minutes of information. And I agree. I think the format to the information you get is awesome. And so what we're doing is we're just continuing. We're about, I think we're booked now for the next like month and a half. So we got at least a month and
Oh,
a half
nice.
on there. But every week we keep getting more and more viewers. A lot of the stuff is getting chopped up by one of our guys and then put on our website on Indiana Strength. And we've gotten a lot of views from that point too. So again, that's the whole goal of it, you know, trying to be able to get out there, have that growth mindset, learn, and then understand what's going on in our field. And they get different perspectives. You know, it's, you know, we have everybody from the strength coach to some different Instagram strength coaches out there to, you know, in the upcoming weeks, we have a Kelly School professor. So our business school in Indiana, she's going to be doing a whole presentation on communication and actually listening and not always talking. So it's there to help out and give a lot of information, but it's there also to be a platform for some of our younger speakers, some interns that maybe wouldn't have the opportunity to speak. This is hopefully going to be able to give them a good platform and allow them to get used to talking, but also share some great knowledge.
All right, man. Well, we're going to get kicked off. So thanks for joining me.